Welcome to the Flora Tracy Monero commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:35 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is June 13th, and it was a pretty impressive day in terms of the size of the moves we've seen, because 10-year Treasury yields jumped by 21.5 basis points, and that's just pairing some of the initial advance that we saw here. It's a major breakout. So this is completing the base formation. And this is the highest level yields have been at in years. So, looking at 10 years of history, it's certainly a long breakout, and we have to go all the way back to 2011 before we can see yields that were at these levels. So, it's a momentous move, and of course, it is following on hot in the heels of the explosive move higher that we've had, for example, in UK gilts. But the issue, of course, is that investors are worried. And you have notable people like Jeremy Grantham, Ray Dalio, Paul Tudor Jones coming out and saying that we should be prepared for a cataclysmic decline. So obviously, this is putting really some significant fear into people's minds, and we're definitely presented with clear downtrends. So the Nasdaq 100 was down another 544 points today. Now this is a big move in just the last 3 days, coming from 12,000 and 12,500 and change down to 11,288 in the space of 3 days is an awfully big decline. But it's a very consistent downtrend. We have a series of ranges, one below the next. We have resistance being encountered at the lower side of overhead trading ranges. We have resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now we've had a bounce from the 1,000-day, but it's very quickly been unwound. And the market is being led lower by cryptocurrencies. So Bitcoin broke lower in here today. It was down nearly $4,000. And that's extending the downtrend. Now we're at a critical juncture here. There's a couple of very notable consistency characteristics for Bitcoin. The most important of those is that you have a hard core of people that won't sell regardless of what happens. And that's equally true of the gold market. There are ardent gold bugs who will hold on regardless of anything else that happens. And I feel like one of those, because I've been holding on to my gold, despite the fact that it hasn't been going anywhere, and gold was down by about $50 in here today. The most important thing is that price is set at the margin. It's the marginal buyer is the one who sets the price. And in terms of Bitcoin, the marginal buyer is often the retail investor who is now flush with cash, or it's an institutional investor also who is playing with liquidity. It is worth, I think, reminding ourselves of the fact that it was the Trump tax cuts coincided with the big move higher in 2017. It was the pandemic stimulus contributed to the big advance in 2020. Then we had the big pullback, and then a very swift rebound all the way up to test the 70,000 level. So now we've had a meaningful decline. Every time Bitcoin has pulled back towards the 1,000-day moving average has been a buying opportunity. So the real measure of the end of a secular bull market is when buying the dip fails to work. And potentially we're in one of those types of situations now. Now, the big decline that we had today was because of the failure of a major exchange. This, of course, also highlights one of the really one of the big arguments against some of the gains in cryptocurrencies is that they're Ponzi schemes. They're totally dependent on new money coming in to pay out yields that are in the region of about 20%. It always seems to me that the fraudulent or the promises made by fraudulent operations always promise 20% dividends. And for a brief time, they even achieve them. But now Bitcoin is back below the 1,000-day moving average. It's going to have to rally in a really impressive, dynamic manner in order to quench the potential here that we're going to see a significant leg lower. Now, the next question then is, what's the other big consistency characteristic? If the 1,000-day moving average fails, well, then you have the other big one, and it is that you only have to hold it for 4 years and you're guaranteed to make money. So we're the 13th of June right now. The price on the 13th, or I guess around the 10th of June in 2018, closed at $6,710. So even the people who bought then 4 years ago are still in the money right now. In other words, we would need to see a very meaningful additional decline to really start to shake the resolve of the people that are even willing to tolerate the kind of volatility we've seen already. But the reality is that liquidity conditions are tightening, and there's lots of reasons for it. But the most acute of those is that the Federal Reserve is now worried about inflation. So the yield curve spread has started to contract again. We're down to about 11 basis points, or in fact, it's gone negative, and that this chart hasn't been updated. So let's make sure that we're actually looking at an updated chart. So we're down to just zero. An inverted yield curve is a reliable lead indicator for recessions, and it first became inverted a couple of months ago. So that started the clock, and that was towards the end of March. Recessions, it can happen any time from 6 to 18 months from the beginning of an inversion. And then I think it's worth considering what are we looking at here? I think what's been happening with Target is particularly relevant. So the share has pulled back in an exceptionally violent manner, coming down from $270 to $144. It's an awfully big move over the course of little more than a year. Now, I do apologize for yawning. I had to get up exceptionally early this morning. My daughter is shadowing in at the thoracic surgery theater at Baylor White Hospital this week and next. So she had to be there for the morning meeting at 6 this morning. So we were up exceptionally early to get ready and make sure we were down there in time. Now, when we look at Target, the reason it's pulled back so violently is very simple. They're liquidating inventory. They bought way too much during the pandemic. They were fearful that they would run out. So they accelerated their orders and they bought more than they needed to ensure that they secured the orders they wanted. This is exactly the kind of behavior we've seen in the past in the semiconductors industry. And now they're going to go through this massive liquidation. So when you buy inventory, it sits as an asset on the balance sheet. When you have to sell it for less than you bought it, well, then it turns up as a loss. And obviously, this is problematic. So it's putting downward pressure on the share. Tesla, you had Elon Musk today telling Tesla employees to expect a very difficult quarter. And the share has pretty much halved over the course of the last 6 months and is still pulling back. So we've, of course, had this external move in oil prices. So one thing that is getting very little discussion is that the US economy contracted in the first quarter, and it was down to technical factors. But when you look at what the technical factors were, it was liquidating inventory was a substantial part of it. And that process is accelerating. So it's going to be a drag on growth in the second quarter. But then we should think about the fact that oil prices have continued to firm in the second quarter. They were starting out the quarter at $100. Now they're at $125. But the most important thing is that in an environment where the stock market has been weak, the crypto market is weak, copper prices are rolling over, oil is still exceptionally steady. And when we look at an individual contract, then that step lower because of the contract change is obviated, and now the price is right in the region of the peak from back in March. And I've been giving a lot of thought to what's going on in Russia, because there's quite likely to be a bit of a delayed reaction. So the longer sanctions are in play for, the more likely it is that the Russian economy is going to experience a very deep correction. And if it's similar to what, for example, Iran experienced, well, then oil production is going to fall. Now, Iran has about 100 million barrels just sitting in storage, waiting for them to get access to the market again. So it's likely that there's going to be some kind of negotiated settlement to bring that oil into the market. But Russia is going to have difficulty sustaining its supply. So that's putting upward pressure on oil prices, despite the fact that economic activity is likely to moderate, and it's contributing to this stagflationary environment that we have. Now, the dollar was also at a new high in here today. It was up a full point. And lots of currencies are declining against it. So the euro was down over a cent, and I think we should be prepared for a clear test of parity. The pound was down even more than the euro was, and this is a meaningful breakdown. So it's at another new low. And if we're seeing the risk of recession in the USA rising, well, it's rising even faster in the UK. And then we can think about Australia. The RBA rose interest rates by 50 basis points, and it did very little to support the currency. It was down over a cent again in here today, but now breaking below the 70 cent level. And it's been holding support at that area for most of the last 3 years. So this is a meaningful breakdown. Now, when we start thinking about how are these stock markets performing, well, the ASX 200 has clearly pulled back from the region of the 200-day moving average and is doing so in a dynamic manner. And this is another chart that hasn't updated. So Australia is not open today. But the reality is, this looks like a chart that's rolling over. And we see that there are three highs around the 76-75 area, but there's a preponderance of downward dynamics. And we're seeing resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, the 1,000-day moving average isn't really all that far away. And there have been plenty of times when it has bounced from that area over the course of the last decade. And it's going to have to do that again. I'm rather worried about the industrial commodities, because at the chart seminar last week, we were having this discussion about copper because it had rebounded and it was pausing around the 450 level. Then it was down another 10 cents in here today. And it does have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and it has the failed upside breaks. And now we're encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is a potential type 2 top formation. And if it breaks the neckline at 400, well, then we have a completed top formation. And of course, Dr. Copper is very much indicative of the global economy and the appetite for infrastructure development. So this is problematic, and it further suggests that there's going to be stagflation, that we have continued high inflation driven by oil prices, and we have lower growth. And central banks are going to be in a very difficult position because they're going to be inhibited from raising rates aggressively. Now, that's most particularly true for countries like the UK, Canada, and Australia, where a larger number of mortgages are floating rate. It's most acute for the UK, where a great deal of debt is concentrated within the property sector, and a lot of people are exceptionally interest rate sensitive. So the UK is inhibited from raising rates aggressively, which of course is why the currency is so weak right now. Then we can think about the broader commodity complex. So looking at the industrial metal miners, BHP Billiton pulled back violently last week, but then was off its low in here today. So we're still seeing resilience in some of the miners. And Anglo American posted a very large downside weekly key reversal last week. And of course, we did see some follow through on the downside today, but it was off its lows as well. So investors aren't quite yet willing to bet that we're deep in a recession and that demand is going to evaporate. But certainly these whopping big downward dynamics are pause for will give anybody pause and are certainly a cause for some concern. So these trends are certainly worth watching. And then the more defensive portion of the market, like the dividend aristocrats, well, they've also been pausing and dropping down in here today. Now, this was a day on the S&P 500 where the vast majority of stocks fell. And when we think then about these kinds of days, where of the 504 shares, 499 of them were in negative territory. Obviously, that's exceptionally negative. And when you start stringing those kinds of days together, well, then you get the advanced decline line, where it just simply takes the number of stocks that rose versus the number that fell. And it's now trending lower. There's been a succession of lower rally highs evidenced since November. It's encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and that moving average has turned lower. So this is the average stock declining. It's a very broad-based decline overall, and as long as it's trending downwards, it's going to be very difficult to argue that the market is not still in a bearish environment. So there aren't many places that are offering any kind of support. But of course, there are some that are still holding out. So some of the industrial metal miners are doing reasonably well, and some of the tanker companies, particularly those that are transporting crude oil, well, they're still holding on reasonably well, but we're also in negative territory in here today. So there's certainly the scope that the war in Ukraine is going to last longer. There's also the scope that the relationship with China is going to become increasingly more fraught. And you had really quite aggressive posturing going on at this conference in the Shangri-La in Singapore, where you had the Chinese defense minister saying that if anyone were to push for Taiwanese independence, that China would fight to their last breath. So that's rather aggressive. The Taiwanese stock market is obviously very susceptible to what happens in the semiconductor sector, and it's in negative territory, and this looks like resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average and a first step below the peak. So we're certainly seeing a lot of negativity in stocks globally. The Nifty index dropped downwards in here today, testing the lower side of this range, but encountering resistance as well in the region of the 200-day moving average. And the Indonesian market is still reasonably steady. But then you have to consider that this is not just about the stock market, but that there's a lot of currency as well. And of course, one of the currencies that has been weakest is the yen. And the yen caught a little bit of a bid in here today. So it's really very oversold. And the yen has classically been a safe haven asset. There has been precious little in the way of evidence that this is anything other than a small move. And then gold, which rebounded really impressively on Friday, gave up the entire advance in here today. And this is a big downward dynamic, $52. So we're going to come back down and test this $1,800 area. The challenge for gold is that it isn't going to remain immune to acute selling pressure indefinitely. It's a major global asset. It sits on a lot of portfolios, and in a crisis or in an acute selling period for markets, people sell what they have profits in, or they just sell what they can rather than what they really want to. And that suggests that gold isn't going to be immune from immediate contagion. Now, it will often rebound faster, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be immune from selling pressure. And personally, I'm not going to be willing to hold on to my futures positions if it drops below $1,800. But I'm more than happy to hold on to my mining stocks, because I really think that their value plays, and that if they do pull back, I'll just buy more of them. But for leveraged positions, I'm going to be a little bit more disciplined in how much pain I'm willing to tolerate. The NASDAQ is still working out on the downside, but platinum is breaking down. It was threatening to push back above the psychological $1,000 level last week, and then came straight back down again over the course of the last three sessions. And silver prices are also still weak, but at least holding the $20 area, which is the upper side of that base formation. But it will certainly need to hold that level, and ideally find support in the current area, which is the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And if this is a new secular return to demand dominance, well, then this area around the 20 will hold. But it's certainly for the bulls to prove. Now, because we're in this difficult environment, people are obviously going to be looking at some of the big declines and thinking, well, golly, prices are a lot lower than they were before, and that means there must be some value. But the challenge, of course, is that we're still in a liquidity-starved environment, and central banks continue to raise rates. And we've got a very short-term oversold condition, so that's going to encourage at least some people to come in and buy. We might easily see a little bit of a bounce come through, but until we see clear evidence of new liquidity coming through, well, there isn't going to be a great deal of people rushing to buy and hold. They might buy for a couple of days, but then they'll take their profits. We're very much more in a trader's market now than an investor's market. The big declines, or I guess the big value opportunities, arise when valuations are so out of whack that they couldn't possibly but be value. And then when we start to see additional liquidity being provided, then that will certainly help to fuel an advance. But we're just not there yet in terms of the willingness of central banks to provide liquidity. And until we see that, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.